Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 103. I am your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Pete Michaud.
Hey, Nimmycakes.
Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Of course, we are here once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got a bunch of new releases to discuss. We've got some news about upcoming game announcements. And of course, we've got our big topic for the week, which is going to be Nintendo's best and worst system redesigns.
Ooh, good topic.
Before we get to that, though, let's kick things off with some impressions of the latest games, starting with, hey, Pikmin for the Nintendo 3DS.
Amazing.
I've put in a few hours with this game so far, and as I thought, after playing the demo, it is indeed a fun 2D take on the Pikmin formula. It's much more of a puzzle platformer than a real-time strategy game like previous Pikmin titles, but it is similar in a lot of ways to the past Pikmins. For instance, each type of Pikmin has special skills. Yellow has electric powers and they can be thrown extra far. Mm-hmm. Blue Pikmin go underwater. Rock Pikmin can smash crystals and defeat protected enemies.
Cool.
And so you have to make use of the Pikmin's various skills, and you have to make sure you have enough Pikmin that survive throughout the level, so you have enough of them to collect items and get you past objects and activate pulleys and do things like that. Your goal in each stage is to collect these items and generate Sparklium. And you do that by collecting all of these real-world objects with humorous names. And the game does have a pretty good sense of humor, and there's some pretty neat stuff to collect. Like, there are old Nintendo cartridges lying around that you can grab.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And also, as I suspected from the demo, there is a lot of trial and error. It's very easy to unknowingly do something that seems, you know, very minor, but actually prevents you from accessing a part of a level or grabbing a certain item, and so then you're required to replay the level if you want to get 100% completion. Yeah. Although you don't have to, like, redo everything in the level. You just have to, you know, go collect that one object you missed. If you got two out of the three objects, those other two stay collected. But it still can be a little bit frustrating when it's like, oh, man, I didn't know that, smashing that one thing would suddenly cut off that chunk of the level. So that can be a little irritating.
Yeah. But then it also can add some replayability, I imagine.
I suppose so, but when it's something that's totally unexpected, like, well, should I go left or right? And suddenly you go right, and then it's like, well, now I can't go left. I'm totally cut off from that area. It just doesn't seem fair. It seems like there should be a warning of some sort if it's going to do something like that.
Yeah.
Because I've kind of got better things to do than, you know, replay levels over and over again. But again, it's not the end of the world or anything.
Yeah, I feel like anything that causes you misery is something I can promote, but...
The controls are good. The control pad and stylus interface works really well, and I like the fairly realistic graphics. They look pretty darn great. I do kind of wish it was 3D, because the game is totally in 2D. However, since most of the action is on the bottom screen, and, you know, only one of the screens has 3D anyway,
right,
I definitely understand why they went that path. It would be pretty weird if only the top screen were in 3D and the bottom part weren't, so I guess I can't really blame them for that. Overall, I would say the game is a lot of fun so far. It's different from past Pikmin games, but nonetheless, I am enjoying it quite a bit.
Do you have any sense of how long the game might be?
It's my understanding that there are 8 worlds with 5 levels each, including a boss fight, in addition to a whole bunch of bonus and unlockable levels.
So maybe not the longest game in the world, but, you know, that kind of makes sense, I think, for this title.
It certainly doesn't feel like it's going to be overly short or anything like that. I think it's going to be fine as far as the length goes. I should also mention that to go along with the game, there is, of course, a brand new Pikmin amiibo.
Amiibo!
Of course there is.
Yes, there is a new amiibo, and if you ask me, it looks fantastic. Sort of like the previous Captain Olimar amiibo that was released for Smash Brothers, this is kind of like a miniature diorama where it's got a whole bunch of different characters on it. So it's got this brick and a bolt, and that's surrounded by 5 different types of Pikmin. And I just love it when they do this kind of thing with the amiibo. So it is one of my favorite amiibo yet, I have to say.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I think it actually looks really cool. Like, it almost looks like you said, like a little diorama. It's like a... It's almost like a Christmas ornament or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a snow globe or something. But
yeah,
looks cool.
I guess you could say that. Yeah, I really like it. And there is a lot of functionality for it in the game as well.
Oh, cool.
You can use amiibo to unlock these really small single-screen bonus areas. and they let you get extra items that give you extra sparklium. And these particular special items are amiibo. So yes, it is using amiibo to get in-game virtual amiibo. So it's like a vicious amiibo cycle for all those amiibo addicts out there. I've collected 5 of them in the game so far. Judging from the inventory screen, it looks like there are 41 amiibo for me to collect in the game.
Now, I have to ask, do you feel like you need to collect them all the way you collect amiibo in real life?
Oh, I definitely got to catch them all, yeah. Oh, it really plays into that. And like all the other stuff, they have hilarious names. Like, I think Mario is called, like, Mighty Suspender Man or something like that.
Amazing.
You can also level up the Pikmin amiibo, and then, depending on how much you've leveled them up, you can pull extra Pikmin, you know, into your level, sort of as an emergency thing. Like, there was one part where I needed, 16 amiibo to get past some object, and I was just a couple short. So I used this, and then I got my extra amiibo. It's like, okay, now I can get past this obstacle, and I can get this third object, and now I don't have to replay the level. So that was actually very, very handy.
Hmm.
I suppose you could call it cheating. But
I was going to say, are you a cheater?
But hey, it's my extra Pikmin amiibo DLC that I bought for $13.
Fair.
It is useful. But yeah, it's very handy. Cool amiibo, cool functionality. I like it a whole lot.
Cool.
I like the game too. Yeah, it comes recommended.
Cool. Would you recommend that I try playing it?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there is that demo that's out there in the eShop. So if you haven't tried that out, go grab it, go download it. It's free. You can play it, 30 times, like with most of the other demos on the eShop. Yeah, I totally recommend checking it out and giving it a try.
I haven't even brought myself to try the demo yet, but I promise to do that shortly.
Yeah, you should give it a shot. Of course, that is not the only new game for the 3DS that came out in the last several days.
Mm-hmm.
The other big first-party release is Miitopia, which is a Mii-based RPG.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, right?
Yeah. Now, I know that you did play the demo in this title, because we talked about who we cast as the villains. Of course, I cast you, my nemesis, as the evil Dark Lord Pete in my game. And if you have played the demo, you might want to know that all that progress carries over directly into the main game, so you can pick up right where you left off if you put in, several hours of progression like I did with the eShop demo.
Nice.
So, as you'd expect, just as the demo indicates, it's a simplified RPG with very simple graphics, and it really just kind of feels like an extra beefy Street Pass title. there's very little exploration aside from, choosing a path when you hit a fork in the road. Like, your characters are just, walking through these levels automatically. They have battles at predetermined spots. And then when you get into a fight, you only control your character. Your CPU allies, they fight for you automatically.
Oh, wow.
And even when it comes to buying equipment, you can't really choose what equipment to buy. Just at certain points, your allies are like, hey, I want to buy something. Can you give me some money? And then you give them money, and maybe they'll buy something useful, or maybe they will just buy a healing item and give you the rest of the money back.
Wow, it's like having children.
I suppose so. But yeah, it's very watered down in a lot of ways compared to your average RPG. But still, it's very, very charming and very amusing. It's funny and it's silly if you use the right cast of Miis. So I'm out on this adventure with friends and celebrities. And so far, the appeal for me hasn't worn off yet. I'm several hours in. I've played a lot of the game. And like I said, as long as you make some entertaining choices, it ends up being really fun. And of course, you can choose your own Miis. You can have an autofill Miis.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the ones that you get if you choose the autofill are going to be like anime characters and celebrities and movie characters and stuff.
Right, the popular ones on the Mii Shop. Or on the Mii Channel? Or where are they?
They don't have that anymore. I don't know where they're all being generated from. It might be having to do something with Miitomo. I don't really know. But at any rate, there is a good selection of stuff to choose from.
Funny. And so I have to ask, am I still your nemesis in the main title?
Oh, yes. Yes, you are. Oh, I did not change that at all. Although there was a role to fill as an evil genie, and I filled that role with Reggie.
Perfect.
I know you picked him as the Dark Lord in your game, right?
I did, mainly just because he looked cool as the Dark Lord. So I thought it fit.
Yeah, well, in my game, he is the genie. He turns out to be not such a bad guy, which, you know, seems appropriate.
Now, you know, you mentioned that it feels like a beefy Street Pass game.
Yes.
Which I don't think, to me, is a bad thing, necessarily, because some of those Street Pass games are actually pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of them.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably a good benchmark of, like, if you're going to like it or not, right? If you don't like Street Pass games, you maybe steer clear, but if you do love Street Pass games and you've kind of always wanted something more, then hey, why not give it a shot?
Yeah, I think that's probably a really, really good way to look at it. And I also kind of feel like, you know, this isn't a game that you're going to be, you know, sinking your teeth into really like you would with a regular RPG. This is something where you can kind of be, you know, watching TV or doing something else on the side. Because like I said, the game, you know, it sort of does a lot of stuff automatically. You don't have to focus your full attention on it.
Right.
Another thing that's really cool about it is that it has a lot of amiibo functionality. Yes, that's right. So, again, for someone like me, you know, I really like Street Pass stuff. I really like amiibo. So it's like, wow, they really made this totally up my alley. So you can unlock all kinds of costumes. There's a Mario costume, Luigi, Bowser, Peach, Samus, Donkey Kong, Ness. And there's lots of ones that I haven't even tried yet.
Hmm.
You know, even though you have to buy a lot of equipment to make yourself, you know, be strong enough to fight the enemies,
Yep. You
can customize its appearance. So even if you have, like, some new goofy outfit, it's like, oh, well, I've got the disco scientist outfit now, and it's, like, the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen, you can still keep its stats but change its appearance, so then you're dressed up in Samus's armor or something. Hmm. So,
right.
Yeah, you really can put that stuff to good use. There are a couple things that are a little annoying about the game,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but at certain points, all of your character growth is reset. You are sent back to level one. What? You lose your companions. Yes.
So it's almost like Final Fantasy VI when I deleted your save file.
Not quite that bad, fortunately. But it can be a little bit frustrating when you've spent time trying to, you know, build up characters and, you know, forge a good party, and that's like, oh, well, back to square one with you. And, you know, it is part of the game. But, you know, my travel companion was supposed to be Mr. T, but for reasons I don't want to get into here, now I'm going to have to go with Shigeru Miyamoto or Sergeant Slaughter. And now that I think about it, I suppose that's not a bad option. But still, kind of a shame. So it's simple, it's kind of dumb, but it is fun. I do like it. You know, is it really worth the $40 asking price? No, it's probably not. I feel like it should only be 20 or maybe 25.
Right.
But I do enjoy it. I would recommend it with a lot of caveats.
Uh-huh. No, maybe not for me, but I really like the idea of it. Cool to see them do that.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly not for everyone. But again, there is this eShop demo to check out that'll give you a very good idea of what you're getting into.
Yep.
Of course, released alongside both Miitopia and, hey, Pikmin.
Hey, Hoffman.
Hey, Pete. Yes, released alongside those two. The reason they came out on the same day was because Nintendo released its new Nintendo 2DS XL system.
Ooh, I know how you feel about this. So, Chris, do you have any more impressions since then?
Well, I mean, it's a very nice system in a lot of ways. It has all of the bells and whistles of the new 3DS XL. It's got built-in amiibo support. It's got the extra power for games like Xenoblade and Super NES Virtual Console.
Right.
And, of course, it has that super stable 2D.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's a joke.
I was like, wait a minute.
But yes, it is missing the 3D, as you can tell from the title.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so for me, it's like, well, would I want a system like this? For me, 3D is really important. I love the 3D of the 3DS, and this doesn't have it. However, the top screen is just amazingly thin. Like, you know, it almost feels a little bit fragile, but it's also just remarkable how thin that darn piece of plastic is with a screen on it. I don't know if I've ever seen a screen that's that thin. Certainly I haven't from Nintendo. It is pretty amazing. And I haven't spent a whole lot of time with the system, but it does seem to be a pretty nice piece of hardware.
That's cool.
Without the 3D, it's definitely not for me. But if, for some reason, you are a person who has held out this long and you have absolutely zero interest in 3D, it's certainly not a bad way to gain access to a fantastic library of titles. Pete, do you have any particular thoughts on it?
No, I did read somewhere that this model of the 3DS / 2DS looks like more at home alongside maybe like smart devices. So, you know, like it kind of looks something in the vein of a iPhone or a smartphone. I thought that was kind of compelling, but I don't know. It's probably not for me. I already have bought many, many 3DSs over the course of the system's life.
Yep, me too.
And as you mentioned, the 3DS is kind of something that I like, and I think the last title I'll probably really play on my 3DS is going to be the new Metroid that comes out.
Right, which is supposed to have really great 3D.
Right, so the idea of going to a two-dimensional one now probably doesn't make sense for me, but I could imagine a lot of parents, you know, looking for a gift for their kids this holiday. Makes perfect sense, I think.
Maybe. I mean, if you've got younger kids and you want to save some dough, you'd probably want to stick with just the regular 2DS because, that's a lot more sturdy. It's not as likely to break. Like I said, this screen is, it's really cool that it's thin, but I can imagine that if it's with younger kids, it could be possibly a problem. That's the weird thing about it, is that I'm not exactly sure who it's for. I mean, yes, it's a nice system,
right?
But if you're going to get something inexpensive for your kids, I would definitely go with the other 2DS, especially with that new model that they announced coming out that's bundled with New Super Mario Bros. 2, and it's only going to be $80. I mean, that would definitely be the one to go with if you want to get something for a younger audience.
Well, if you need to pry open a door also, then the Wedge 2DS is perfect for you as well.
Well, you have a point there. Moving from the 3DS over to the Nintendo Switch, mm-hmm. There was also a notable release on that console in the past week.
Oh, do tell.
And, I haven't actually played this one myself. However, my good friend and former co-host of the show, Too Hot Scott Michella, was sure to let me know that he is really digging Namco Museum for the Switch.
Ah, cool.
That is a $30 bundle that includes a whole slew of classic Namco titles, including Pac-Man, Dig Dug, Galaga, Galaga 88, The Tower of Druaga, Rolling Thunder, Rolling Thunder 2, Sky Kid, Splatterhouse, Tank Force, and Pac-Man Versus.
Yeah. That last one in particular is a pretty cool note because it was, at the time you needed a bunch of hardware to run it. So it's kind of fun to see that they've actually ported that to Switch.
Of course, if you're going to play that the right way, everyone's still going to need their own Switch system to do it. But as far as doing multiplayer, there's a free download, so the other three players don't need to own the full version of Namco Museum to be able to play it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
But yeah, it's very nice to have that game out there and in circulation again. The other thing that's really cool about it is that it has a vertical view, which is how they were manufactured in the arcade.
Right.
And that's a really cool thing to see come to the Switch as well, since you can, have the system with a vertical orientation. So that's something that Scott was saying is really cool about it and that he was hoping that they would do, and indeed they did.
You have a vertical orientation.
Why, thank you very much.
So, Chris, you actually can play with just one Switch console, but it's not the same game. You basically are all controlling a ghost, and you're trying to hunt down a CPU-controlled Pac-Man.
Oh, okay. Well, that's certainly better than nothing. Pretty cool.
Yeah, not too bad.
Moving on, then, to a little bit of news. First of all, we've got some news out of Capcom's camp. We have found out that Capcom is bringing Resident Evil Revelations Collection to Switch later this year.
Oh, yeah. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. So for $39.99, you'll be able to buy the complete collection, which includes Resident Evil Revelations 1 on a cartridge, and then a download code for Resident Evil Revelations 2. Or you can buy the two games separately, digitally, for $19.99 each. It's a little weird that the physical release only gives you, one of the games instead of both of the games.
Yeah.
But I guess it's, a better option than nothing. But really the cool thing about this is that we're finally getting Resident Evil Revelations 2 on a Nintendo system.
That's right.
The first one debuted on the 3DS, but then the second one, it bypassed 3DS, didn't come to Wii U. But hooray, now we are finally getting it on a Nintendo system. Pretty cool.
Yeah, and, coupled with the sales of Street Fighter apparently being pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is probably, and I'm totally just guessing here, but it's probably a step towards us seeing Resident Evil 4 maybe come out eventually on Switch. And I only say
I don't know about that
because I would be ecstatic to have it on Switch. So I feel like you know, if you really want to see more Capcom games, keep buying their games, and you'll see more and more coming to Switch. Hopefully they'll become real new, brand new games, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, Capcom loves to re-release its old properties, and the old properties are great, mm-hmm. so usually that's not a problem. I mean, I would kind of like to see them bring out a couple of their you know, classic compilations that they've brought out on other systems right. recently. You know, other systems are getting the Mega Man Legacy Collection 2, and there was that recent Disney collection, so hopefully this is a step towards that. But, you know, really, it would be great to see some brand new stuff on Switch sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I liked Revelations a lot, so I feel like this is probably worth picking up, especially for some Resident Evil on the go.
And especially if you have not played the previous versions.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, we also got some additional info about Monster Hunter Stories. That is, of course, a Capcom title, but Nintendo is publishing it over here in North America.
Yeah.
And they have finally revealed the game's release date. It is going to be coming out on September 8th, and there's going to be a demo in the eShop on August 10th. So that's just about a week away. You'll be able to try the game out and test it and see if it's up your alley.
Sweet. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this one. You are too, right?
Yeah, I definitely am. The Japanese version, of course, had a bunch of amiibo released alongside it, and there's no word about the amiibo being released in North America, but I do have them all already, so assuming that functionality is still in there, I am looking forward to putting those amiibo to use once the game comes out in North America.
I'm not surprised in the slightest. You know, this one looks cool because it is, I think we've mentioned it before, but it looks like a Pokemon version of, or a little nod to Pokemon of Monster Hunter. And it kind of seems to buck the trend of the typical Monster Hunter title. So it definitely has my curiosity. I'd love to try the demo out and see how it plays.
Yeah, it's very different. It's much more of an RPG than it is a action game like previous Monster Hunter titles. And, you know, I keep trying to get into them. It's never mm-hmm. really stuck with me that well.
Right.
But this thing looks like it's totally up my alley, so I'm really looking forward to trying it out.
Yeah, me too.
And speaking of cool games from over in Japan, Dragon Quest XI is already out overseas on the 3DS and competing systems. And Square Enix has announced that it will indeed be coming to North America.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah, fans have been wondering for a long time if it was going to make it over here or not. But yes, they have made it official. We are going to get it. They haven't said for sure if it's going to be both the 3DS and PS4 versions, as far as I know. But I would assume it's probably going to be both of them.
Hmm. How's the reviews of that game been in Japan? Do you know?
I haven't actually seen any review scores yet, but between the 3DS and PS4 versions, it's already sold more than 2 million copies, so there's no question that Square Enix has a big hit on their hands.
Totally.
We don't know when the game's going to be coming out in North America. We know it's going to be sometime in 2018, and the game's going to be called Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age over here. But beyond that, we're still going to have to wait for more information.
Cool. Hey, before we take our intermission, Chris, I wanted mm-hmm. to just give you an update on Splatoon.
Oh, Splatoon 2? Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been playing
playing more of that?
Playing more.
Well, you already liked it before, so.
But I finally got into Salmon Run mode.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is still a little wonky that you can't get in there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's unfortunate because it's like not available like even every other day. It's like maybe three
right.
or 4 days in between modes. So that's a little disappointing. But I do think it kind of makes this like compelling case to play it more when it is available.
But it's really good, right? What is so fun about it?
Yeah, so what's cool is, so far I've only played with random folks online.
Okay.
And I lucked out in the first match I played, we won.
mm-hmm.
And so it was like this really good experience. Now since then, I've played like a ton of matches where we lose. And it's not as easy as I thought it was. I don't know how much you know, but it's like a horde mode, right? There's you got waves of new enemies coming in. There's three waves, and you just have to get through those. And there's these seven different bosses that appear. And they come out of the water depending on, you know, what round you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last round has a bunch come out. And these seven different bosses all have different tactics on how you beat them. Like, one is like, you know, he's standing on a stack of pots and pans, and you have to destroy all the pots and pans before you can destroy him. You got to make him come down to your level. There's another one that he has these like two little like waste baskets on either side, and they open up, and you got to throw a bomb in, but it's really precise, and it's a timing is required. You know, everybody's struggling to try and take these bosses down as quickly as possible. You know, a couple of them are really tough to defeat on time in like a time limit. So all of a sudden, more bosses show up while you're trying to take them out, and it like quickly gets overrun. So you know, it's fun. It's what I like about it is that you don't feel like that competitive nature where you're just trying to beat people all the time. Instead, it's almost like this team mode. But it also can be a little frustrating because when you can't talk to your teammates and you see some guy just running around with an egg and you need one more to like complete the wave, it's like, come on, put the freaking egg in the basket. But there really is no way besides like spamming. There are ways to kind of emote. But you only get, it's pretty limited. You only get like a booyah and like a follow me.
So it doesn't have a voice chat feature?
Well, there is a voice chat, but it's only amongst friends. So you have to make like a lobby and play that way. But I've been playing just random folks online and that mode, there's no voice chat. So that's a ton of fun. I've also played, you know, multiplayer a little bit more. There's some really cool levels out there. I played this one, I forgot the name of it, but it's basically looks like a BMX arena. You got these like kind of curved half pipes and sort of 45 degree angle banks. It's kind of fun to ink through, I guess.
Sounds nice.
And in general, I just feel like it's a great experience. It feels like a complete package, and I feel like it's even more so than the original. I've played story mode, and that's pretty cool too. I haven't played as much as I probably should have so far, but I do like it that it's mainly like a weapon tutorial. There are some weapons that I've had trouble with, like you know, the dualies. There's this way to like, you can basically jump while you're shooting, and I completely forgot how to do it. And in the game, there's not really a good way to learn that. But when I went through single player mode, I was like, oh yeah, that's how you do it. It's like this full-fledged tutorial, but you know, all in all, I'm really enjoying it.
Cool. Glad to hear that it's getting even better. I mean, you liked it a lot last week, so it's nice to hear that it's actually even better than you initially thought. Are you ready to give it, like, a review score? Do you know what you would give it on, say, a Nintendo Power rating scale?
To be totally fair, I've only played about 5 or 6 hours, so I don't feel like it's quite enough to give it a full-fledged review.
Okay.
But, you know, I gotta say, it's at least a 9. It's a fun game.
All right. Very cool. Glad to hear it. Thanks for the update. And with that, I think we should take a little intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is Nintendo's best and worst system redesigns. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is Nintendo's best and worst hardware redesigns. Of course, Nintendo has just released the new Nintendo 2DS XL, which is probably, you know, like the 45th revision of the Nintendo 3DS. It's almost become a cliche the way that when Nintendo releases a system, some people will say, oh, well, you don't want to get the first iteration because Nintendo is just going to release a better, new and improved one down the road. And it's not always true, but certainly Nintendo has a history of revising and improving and iterating and making new versions of its most popular systems.
Yeah, which isn't really a bad thing, but it is.
No, it's not.
It is weird because it kind of leaves you like the funky taste in your mouth once you've bought, you know, early adopter and you want to play their new game as soon as possible. It's tough.
I suppose that's true, but the reason that we bring it up is because there are some system redesigns that are really, really great, and then there are some that are actually not quite so great. But it seems like, you know, Nintendo's going to keep doing it. And, you know, I certainly don't blame them for trying to improve things and trying to add features or trying to cut costs. But I thought we would take a look back at some of the best and worst systems that they have redesigned over the years.
Yeah, cool. This is a great topic, I think. It's like a fun little trip down Nintendo's collection history.
And I thought, let's start with something positive. Let's start discussing their best redesigns.
Mm-hmm.
So, Pete, why don't you go ahead? Do you have a favorite redesigned Nintendo system?
You know, Chris, it's really tough. I mean, this list, like, you know, when you asked me about this, I was like, man, there are a lot of redesigns, and there's a lot of good ones, and there's a lot of bad ones, and there's a lot of really, like, in my mind, debatable ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're going to talk about any, and the one that stands out in my mind the most was probably the Game Boy Advance SP.
Yes. Yeah, I can certainly see you picking that one. I mean, that's the one that took it from the horizontal design to, you know, becoming more of a clamshell design.
That's right. Well, and not only that, the backlight was the was the key feature on that, because
yeah, absolutely.
The Game Boy Advance original was almost almost too reflective to be useful in the light and then too dark to not be used without a light. The games were amazing looking on it, and I remember being super angry that there wasn't a good backlighting solution for it.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I remember when I was playing that, I remember, you know, having this light set up over my kitchen table, and I would sit there and I would play it, and it worked really well for me, but that was basically the only way I could play it. If I tried playing it anywhere else, I really couldn't see it adequately. And, you know, I was able to get a lot of enjoyment out of it that way. But for people who didn't really have an ideal setup, I can see why they would be kind of, you know, unhappy with the lack of a backlight on the original Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, it was just unfortunate, I think, was the main thing. But yeah, so I think Game Boy Advance SP was probably one of the, if not the best, one of the best redesigns. And like you said, the clamshell made it, you know, ultra portable, and it was really, in my opinion, the definitive version of that hardware.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I really do like the form factor of the original one, and, you know, I really like the color purple, so I certainly didn't mind the fact that it was a purple system. But I also have to admit, yes, it did look a lot more childish. It did look a lot more like a toy, and the redesigned SP with the, you know, the silver was kind of the default color on that.
Right.
I mean, there were a whole bunch of different colors released, but I felt like, you know, silver and black is kind of what they were going for, and it just felt a whole lot sleeker. It felt like a piece of, you know, really nice modern electronics, and like you said, it was, you know, super pocket size. You could take that thing anywhere.
Yeah. Now, do you remember when they did it was kind of this weird screen upgrade that they didn't really announce. Basically, they were swapping old units with these new units that had a much brighter screen.
Only vaguely.
Yeah, and honestly, we got to play some at work, you know, at Nintendo, but they were much better. And, if you can get your hands on that version, that one in particular was one of the best versions of the Game Boy Advance you'll ever see.
Yeah, I had a couple of them. I had a regular, you know, launch version of the SP, which was silver, and then I also got the NES version of the system, and I believe that one had the new and improved screen on it.
Right, yeah.
And of course, it also, you know, was, you know, decked out to look like a NES system, so it was really, really nifty, in my opinion. They released that alongside all the classic NES games for a ridiculous $20 price tag on Game Boy cartridges. But still, you know, that was back before Virtual Console, so that was a really nice thing to have, in my opinion.
Yeah, I had that one as well. It was that was almost a must-own for old-school Nintendo.
Yeah, for the hardcore Nintendo fans, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the real hardcore fans had to get the Famicom version from Japan, but I was happy with just the NES one.
I don't know. The Famicom means nothing to me, I mean, personally, but yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I didn't own a Famicom either, so that's why I was able to pass it up. But, I mean, no matter which version of the system you had, the GBA SP was very, very impressive and a great redesign.
Indeed. So what about you? What's on your list?
Well, I think the next one I would pick would have to be the DS Lite.
Hmm.
You know, the Nintendo DS, when it came out, You know, it was confusing in a lot of ways. People weren't quite sure what to make of it out of the gate. How do you take advantage of these features? How do you deal with a touch screen? How do you deal with two screens? And the design of the original system really didn't help with that, because it was just kind of bizarre and clunky. And yeah, it's like they just had two different people design the top half and the bottom half, and then they just shoved these two darn things together. So it was just really funky and awkward.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like something sci-fi from, like, but like the 80s version of sci-fi.
Yes. Yes, it did. That's a good way to put it. So, you know, then people started figuring it out. They learned how to make things that were really cool on the DS, and we got a whole collection of awesome software, and, you know, to this day, this might still be Nintendo's best handheld system. But to go along with that figuring things out and, you know, getting things right on the software end, they went back and made things really right on the hardware end. And you were saying earlier about how with the new 2DS, it feels kind of like an iPhone or something.
Yeah.
Well, I really feel like that's what was in mind when they were coming up with the DS Lite.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was very white. It was very sleek. It was very modern and did not feel like a toy at all. It was just a really, really nice and slick piece of hardware.
Yeah, it really was. You know, it's funny. They did the DSi after that.
They did.
And I still think the Lite was better, and mainly because you could still play your Game Boy Advance games in it.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it still had all those great features, and sure, it didn't have the online eShop capabilities, but even so, it was, you know, from almost every other perspective, I would say the DS Lite is the best version of that system.
Yeah, and it had this, like, really cool glossy roundness to it. It almost felt like you could, like, eat it. I know that sounds funny.
I never tried that.
But it did. And then because it was region lock free, I specifically waited to get, like, they had a dark blue one in Japan that I wanted. I think it ended up coming out here, like, maybe a year or two later. But that was my, it was like a navy color, and it was still one of my favorite handhelds I've had.
Yeah, it was an excellent system. You know, I forget if I had other ones in addition to the white one, but the white one is the one that really stands out in my mind, and it was sort of the definitive version in my head, anyway.
Hmm. All right, well, what else you got?
Well, the third one I would pick for a great redesign would be the new Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And, of course, you know, Nintendo loves to have these ridiculous names. Why do they have to have new in the name? Because it's not new anymore. It's been out for a couple of years now.
There's either, like, a new or a plus or a Lite.
Yeah. Well, the Lite makes sense. You know, that I can work with. But it's hard to have new in the title when your system's not new anymore. But yes, this was the enhanced version of the 3DS. And the XL is what North America was really pushing for people. That was the one they wanted people to get. But for me, I really like the non-XL version. I like the smaller form factor. I love the fact that it has these Famicom-colored buttons on it. There's just something really, really charming about that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it has, you know, all of the additional features, you know, the higher memory, the better, sharper 3D, the joystick for camera control. And, of course, this is the version that had the interchangeable faceplates.
Right.
And so, you know, in addition to the default stuff that comes with, the one that I got has a came with a Mario faceplate and a Smash Brothers faceplate. And then I went out and bought a Zelda faceplate from Nintendo's online store. And I just love the fact that I can customize my system like that and make it Smash or Mario or Zelda or, you know, whatever else I wanted to buy if they were still available.
Right.
So, you know, I know a lot of people would lean towards the XL version just because it's bigger. But for me, it's almost too big. I like the fact that the regular one, you know, fits more easily into your pocket. You can carry it around a little bit. I mean, I can get the XL in there, but it's kind of a pain in the butt, literally, when I put it in my back pocket. So I just like that smaller one. And then, you know, when you have the XL, you've got a bigger screen, but you've also got bigger pixels.
Right.
So the games, you know, kind of might look better, arguably, on the smaller version, on just the regular old new 3DS. So
yeah.
I'm a big fan of that system, and I really, really like it.
Yeah, that's cool. I actually never owned that one, but I have played it a little bit, and I do like it for all the reasons you're mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
It does kind of remind me of the DS Lite version of the 3DS, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Just because it's kind of that same body style. It's like, you know, very compact, very cool. The removable faceplates are awesome. I love my 3DS XL, and I think that, to me, that's probably the definitive version. But...
Well, that's what Nintendo of America would like you to think.
But,
that's
you know...
That's the way they positioned it.
Yeah, they did. They really did. They kind of, like, they treated the non-XL version like a redheaded stepchild.
To me, the fact they made it so elusive almost made it, you know, more desirable, because it was so, you know, kind of rare and hard to find.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. Over in Japan, they were kind of being like, oh, the XL is the adult system. Mm-hmm. The non-XL version is kind of the kids system. You know, I didn't see it that way at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose kids are more likely to fall in love with the colored buttons and the face plates. But, I mean, you know, I'm a Nintendo fan. I'm a, you know, kid at heart forever. But I'm sorry, I interrupted whatever you were saying, so please continue.
No, I think it was all a lie anyway. But I do like my 3DS XL. To me, it really is the definitive version. I actually ended up buying one. I wasn't in the market for a 3DS XL or a new 3DS XL. And then my old 3DS got stolen.
Oh, nasty.
Which sounds sad, but it, whatever. It caused me to buy a 3DS XL, and I've never looked back. I really like being able to have the micro SD in there. I buy a lot of online games, mm-hmm. and having them all built into the system makes it really nice for traveling. So that's my version.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah, I mean, I was originally not planning to get the 3DS XL myself. I was like, okay, I'm just going to hold out and wait. They'll eventually do the regular non-XL version.
Right.
But because they launched it with a special Zelda system, like, well, I got to get the Zelda system. So, yeah, they kind of tricked me into getting that one and then getting the regular, smaller version down the road.
You really are a fanboy.
But either way, they are definitely both great systems, even though I have to lean towards the non-XL and you are leaning towards the big fatty there.
Yeah, I am.
Anything else on your favorite redesigns list?
The other one that I would say is totally worth mentioning here is the Game Boy Pocket.
Yeah, okay.
Now, it's funny because originally I started to think Game Boy Color, mm-hmm. but you almost can't call Game Boy Color a redesign, but in some ways you kind of can. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a full-fledged move into another console. It played all your old games.
Right, right.
So I kind of still want to like have an asterisk nest next to the Game Boy Color.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't really call it a redesign, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, the original Game Boy was such a clunker. It was like...
Yeah.
We
didn't know it at the time, but, you know, when you look at that thing now, it's just so bulky in your hand, man. Like, it barely fits there.
It was a portly little handheld. Let's just say that.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And not only that, it also took, you know, four AAA batteries. Or is it AA?
AA, I believe. The original took four AA batteries.
That's right. Four AA batteries, and it lasted...
And they lasted for, what, 9 hours or something?
Yeah. So it was definitely, like, a little ridiculous. Almost everyone I knew had the battery pack, because you really had to have the Nintendo battery pack if you wanted to...
I didn't.
If you wanted to play it in a car ride. Wow, you poor bastard. Anyway, so the Game Boy Pocket kind of came out and changed everything with that. It was a much smaller form factor. I think it still took batteries, but it was far less, like two, mm-hmm. one or two, and it lasted forever on it.
Well, then there was also the screen. The screen was improved quite a bit,
oh, yeah.
I would say, in the Game Boy Pocket. It was slimmer, and I mean, the screen was still, you know, only four colors and kind of pea soupy, but it was still a big step up over the original Game Boy screen.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, that's one up that's way up there, too. It probably came out too late in the life cycle to be really, truly picked up by most people who owned the original. I didn't own one myself, but I definitely thought it was a cool handheld and kind of stacks up against the rest.
Well, it's hard for me to disagree with you about that. Now, as for the worst Nintendo system redesigns, what would you say about that list? What would be your pick there?
Now, the main one and the weirdest one in my mind is maybe the Wii Mini.
Yeah, that's definitely on my list of least favorite redesigned systems.
Now, it's funny because, you know, when I worked at Nintendo, when the Wii Mini was announced, mm-hmm. I was working in the marketing department for their websites, basically. And
okay.
And this...
Well, you probably were in a tough situation. You're like, how do I sell this thing? Well, it's got no features.
Well, it was funny because originally I think it was coming out in Canada only.
Oh.
Yeah, like I can't remember that 100%, but I'm pretty sure that it was Canada only first.
Yeah, I feel like it was Canada first, yeah.
And we...
oh, Canada.
And we and we had to like put promos up for just if people were like coming to the website from Canada. Anyways, I remember this just kind of came out of the blue. Like I hadn't.
So you don't like it just because it was appealing to Canadians? That's very inappropriate, sir.
That's hearsay. I'm not saying that at all. But no, it just seemed weird. You know, there was no UI, right?
Well, it was just completely stripped down. I mean, they took out
everything.
It seemed
right?
like almost everything. It had no online, which means no WiiWare, no virtual console,
right.
No DLC, and it had no backwards compatibility. So couldn't play GameCube games, and thus no controller ports
yeah.
on it.
It kind of just felt like a Wii for no one. Like, what was the point of this? Like, who didn't own a Wii at that point that was like, oh, hey, this seems like a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, actually, from a physical redesign standpoint, it was pretty cool. I like the look of the thing.
Right.
But the fact that it had basically no features just made it so ridiculous. I think half the thing I liked about the Wii was that it had all of that downloadable stuff and that you could play NES and Super NES and Genesis and TurboGrafx and Neo Geo games
right.
all on one system. And you had to take that away and be like, well, all you can do is play your on-disc games. There's a lot of great stuff, but yeah, it just seems like such a shame.
Yeah, it's just a weird move, I think. And like, you know, I could imagine it being popular maybe for like, you read a lot of the articles about like Wii's being played in like nursing homes and stuff like that, and might have been the definitive version for that, but like at that point, like
right.
no one needed it, so
yeah it was, I mean, that's probably why they brought it out, was because that market was kind of dying off. That was when mobile gaming was kind of taking away the casual market, so maybe they're like, oh, maybe we should make this entry-level Wii system for the casuals. But by then it was kind of too late, I think.
Yeah. Anyways, bizarre system.
Yes.
How about you? What do you got?
Well, one of my least favorites would have to be the Game Boy Micro.
Really?
Which, yes. I mean, and it's kind of weird. Despite the name Game Boy Micro, it's actually a Game Boy Advance system.
Yeah.
It's a very, very small one. I mean, I know some people really like the fact that it is such a tiny system and it is so portable. And it is really, really impressive. On a technical level, they were able to do that. And of course, it does play a lot of games. But if you actually try to play them on this thing, you'll be like, wow, this is a really, really tiny screen. These games are kind of almost unplayable. So while it's great in theory, and it's great to put in your pocket and, almost lose it there, actually playing the games on such a tiny screen, for me, was just not fun at all. And then on top of that, as I alluded to a couple weeks ago, there was supposed to be this big push for interchangeable faceplates and customization on the system. And then they ended up dropping that. And so, the system came with three faceplates that you could swap in and out. But then there were no more aside from that. And so what was supposed to be one of its key features never amounted to anything.
Now, I kind of want to fight you on this one because Game Boy Micro, in my opinion, was pretty cool.
Like I said, I know that a lot of people really enjoy it, but it was just too darn small for me.
Yeah, for me, what I liked about it was that it was actually made out of like metal. It wasn't made of plastic, from what I could tell. And so it just had this like kind of premium, like hard feel to it. What I was sad about was that they couldn't get the price point lower. I can't remember what it retailed
for. Yeah, that was another
for,
big issue.
But what was it like $100, $130, something like that?
I can't remember either, but certainly felt to me like it was... too expensive for what it was.
Yeah, now if they could have somehow released it for like $50 or something like that, I think that like it could have had the opportunity to just fly off shelves.
Right, because this was already very late in the system's life cycle. The DS was already out.
Yeah, and it does still find its way into my pocket or backpack on occasion. It's a good one to use on the subway or the mass transit or whatever you ride, just because it's so easily portable and it plays all your Game Boy Advance games. But, to your point, it is a little small. There's some games that are, I wouldn't say unplayable, but unpleasant.
I definitely would.
Unpleasant is certainly a word I would use. But, for getting your quick, like, Metroid Zero mission fix or whatever have you, tactics or Final Fantasy Tactics or something. It's pretty cool.
Well, I will personally be sticking to that lovely GBA SP that we were already talking about as the definitive version of the system. Game Boy Micro, just not for me. Didn't do anything for me, I'm afraid.
That's fair. I'm not going to fight you.
You already did. The next one that I would say is a least favorite redesign is the original Nintendo 2DS.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reasons for that are fairly obvious. You know, this was not a system made for gamers like you and me. It was clearly made for a younger, new audience. It was supposed to be an entry-level system, and that's why it, you know, looks like a doorstop. And you can't, you know, flip the screens down. They had to put in, you know, even a special button to pretend you're flipping the screens for games that relied on that functionality.
Yeah.
So, and of course, it took out the main feature of the 3DS, which I keep saying over and over again, is the 3D. So it looked super goofy. It took away a key feature. And this was another one that I felt was way overpriced out the gate. I mean, today, now that it's like down to $80 or something, I think that's a great price point right. for an entry-level system for younger kids like this. But at the time it was released, the price just seemed way too high. What was it? Like, was it $130?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it was $130.
But certainly didn't have that mass market price point where you could be a mom and just be like, you know, buy this if you see it as you're walking past at the checkout at Target or something. I think it really needed to have a, you know, under $100 price point for it to achieve that.
Right.
But it's just, in my opinion, a very ugly system that was only a huge step backwards over the, you know, previously released versions of the 3DS. So
yeah, it's definitely a goofy version. It's the one version of like the 3DS line that I really have no desire to ever really own. Even the new the redesigned 2DS, I think, is higher on my list of potential ownership.
Well, heck yeah. I mean, that thing's pretty darn nice.
Yeah, but this one just,
I mean, it's the polar opposite design-wise.
Yeah, this one, for some reason, it feels like something you'd see in, like, a kid's doctor's waiting room or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why I think that, but it just kind of had that feel to it. Like, it almost felt like a kid's toy, I think.
Yes, very much so. Is there anything else that you want to add to the list of worst redesign systems?
Well, it's hard to mention, but I guess the NES redesign that came out way at the very end.
Really?
But, you know, I can't give it too much crap, but I guess more than anything, it's fighting my nostalgia, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, if anyone who's listening owned the original NES and grew up playing the gray box that you had to, like, you know, insert games into horizontally and push down into a tray.
Very iconic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then you also kind of grew to love it. It's kind of like your car that like wouldn't start, that you like, you know, you have to rub the steering wheel to try to get to play to, you know, to,
I don't know. I hated my first car, man.
Yeah. But it did. There was something about it that had character and it kind of had this personality. It didn't always work. It didn't always, you know, boot up every time. Sometimes your game would boot up and and you'd see like corruption on the screen because there was some dust in your cartridge.
So yeah, dirty contact.
Yeah. So that kind of made it fun on occasion. But, you know, this redesign was like, it turned it into a top-loading system.
Yeah, it was totally different. It wasn't a box. It had all these rounded curves and angles and slanted and top-loading. And the controller that came with it was, you know, like almost a dog bone shape. It was pretty funky and ridiculous. And I don't know. I don't know what they were thinking, but they were totally trying to be like, yes, let's do something that's like hip and different. What I think the main driving force behind that redesign was. And personally, I don't hate it. I don't mind the fact that it's something totally wonky and totally different. Although, to be fair, I don't think I've ever actually played that one. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not one of my favorites or anything, but I certainly wouldn't consider it to be one of my my least favorites. I would just consider it to be a very unique oddity in the Nintendo lineup, personally.
I gotta say, just for the color scheme alone, you might have to put it on this list, but if you haven't seen it...
Wasn't it just mostly gray and red?
Yeah, I guess maybe it wasn't that bad. It just looked like a funky system. It looked like something like the Cylons made or something.
Well, it definitely was that. It definitely was funky. No argument for me there.
I think more than anything, it needs to be on this list for messing with my nostalgia.
Yeah, well, it won't be on my worst redesign list, but certainly I can't blame you for putting it on yours.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my list would be best redesigns, the new 3DS, the GBA SP, and the DS Lite, and the worst redesigns for me, Wii Mini, 2DS, and the Game Boy Micro.
Yeah, and I guess if I was going to give a list, it would be the GBA SP as well, the Nintendo DS Lite, and then last but not least, the Game Boy Pocket.
Okay.
And worst redesigns, I would say Wii Mini and the Nintendo 2DS original.
All right.
And the NES redesign.
All right. Well, if you say so.
I said it.
At any rate, I think that brings this topic to a close. And I suppose that means we should wrap up this episode of the show.
But first...
Before we go, yes, that's right. We do have time for a dramatic reading. And this time we are continuing the reading of Captain Nintendo from Nintendo Power Volume 3.
Oh man, I've been waiting for this one.
I'll bet. You know, when we left off last week, we'd been introduced to Nintendo employees Maxwell W. Powers and his best friend Brett Randles, who was about to put the moves on his co-worker Tara Bates.
It's a bad idea, kid.
And now the saga continues. "Hey, what are you two gold bricks doing?" called Tara as she returned. "We're just running on idle cycles. Max dropped by those special microchips we've been expecting," replied Brett, picking up his NES Advantage and resuming his game. "Oh, thanks, Max," said Tara, setting her piping hot cup of coffee next to the package of Napa G's microchips. "You bet. Well, break time's over. Got to go." Max started toward the door. Tara? Asked Brett as he turbo-fired missiles into the mother brain. "Yes, Brett," Tara answered. Neither of them noticed the box of microchips had begun to glow. As its glow increased, it started to hum. "Well, would you like to gulp, go out?" Suddenly, the box was beaming like a small sun, and the hum swelled to a piercing whine. Tara and Brett, startled, turned toward the glow. Max, standing frozen at the door, could only manage to stare and sputter, the chips under his breath. Brett said nothing, but stood transfixed by the incredible bright object just a few feet away. He could sense it was going to explode any second. He felt that he had only one chance to save his friends. Pushing Tara backward, Brett lunged toward the pulsating miniature star in an attempt to absorb the explosion with his own body.
Is that where we end?
And that's where we're going to end it today on this exciting cliffhanger.
Man.
We will continue this harrowing tale in our next episode.
That already was much more exciting than the time I worked there. That's not true. That's not that exciting. Chris, do you remember the computer chips when you were at Nintendo? I don't remember seeing radioactive computer chips, but...
Well, not over at the Nintendo Power Department, but then again, you know, I was never in product testing, and who knows what was going on with those guys. So, you know, that's why they had them all sealed off behind that door that was, you know, not so far away. In there, anything went.
You know, I've got to be honest, I've never heard the term gold brick.
I don't think I have either.
And then I just looked it up, and it says it's to shirk duty or responsibility.
Hmm.
Yeah, who knew?
All right, well, it must have been big in the 80s or something. What else can I tell you? I don't know. Anyway, I guess that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would leave us a rating on iTunes or tell your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud.
Later, Goldbrick.
And our good friend, Gruntilda the Witch.
Ah, ah, ah.
We will see you next time.